The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right, if your first bet's up to $1,000, if it doesn't win, you get another shot to cash in. You can throw down all the major action, baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with the same game parlay, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. Yeah, you have the Wyndham Championship coming up on August 4th and the next PGA event. Hey, maybe bet a futures bet on Aaron Judge. You think he's going to break the home run record? He's hot right now. What is he at, 43? So that might be an interesting bet. Why not throw some bucks down on it? Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 230 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another Sunday. A little late here on Sunday. Yeah, I got recording last night with Alec and Jay, and we did an Ice Wars 2 preview show, and the beers were flying, and goofiness was the flavor of the day. And after it was done, I went upstairs and completely forgot to upload this one. So bear with me. Yeah. As soon as I'm done, this is like Sunday. I had to work this morning and I just got home and I'm like cutting the promo now for this and I will get this up immediately. So sorry for those delayed, or for the UK folks that are usually, at 1 a.m., our time 1 a.m., but, you know, right, you know, usually right in time for their commute, there's an episode there for them. I apologize for the delay, folks, but I have two guests today, Ice Wars competitors, James Brooks, otherwise known as The Hooligan, and Dallas Otto, who was actually the referee in the first event, has now handed in his stripes and is putting on a jersey and gloves, and he is set to rumble in number two here. And Dallas is going to be taking on returning Keegan McGraw, and James Brooks is going to be taking on the returning Corey Allen in single bout competition. So, looking forward to seeing that. And, I just wanted to have them on the show and talk about their journey through minor hockey and junior hockey, to Ice Wars, what brought them here and how they got here and, their backstory. So, James was, he played in the Federal Hockey League, fought Chase Tippett and Chris Offenati and all those guys. And he played for, 5 years. And then Dallas played junior B out in BC in the Kootenai Junior League, and then came back and finished up his junior career in the Alberta Junior B League in Okotoks, and is currently playing senior hockey in the Ranchland League with the Palominos, who, I mean, it's like I said, well, I may as well have a Palomino alumni week on the podcast. And they're taking over Ice Wars. I mean, Jordan Kennedy, Travis Check, Dallas, and Taylor McNeil, all competitors in Ice Wars 2 and all members of the senior hockey team. And so I think it'll be the Palomino posse will be out all over the place at the River Cree. And I think there should be probably a fairly large cheering section for those guys. So so it was fun to have them on. I had Travis Check on previously. And, of course, he was... he won in Ice Wars, the initial contest. He had a single fight with Bo Cornell and won that one by TKO. So, and he is now a member, or he will be participating in the Cruiserweight tournament. So, and I'm Jay and Alec and I talk a lot about it, obviously on the preview show, but I'm super excited for that Cruiserweight tournament. I think this is going to be great. And, I'm just really looking forward to the whole event. So, and that's kind of the going forward, as these Ice Wars go on. I had AJ on recently and a number of the competitors, Travis, and of course Dallas now and James. And I just like to get the guys on and just talk about things and get their backstories. So when you're watching, you're like, oh, that's the guy that played in the Federal League or whatever in Danville. And stuff like that, you know, got to get you familiar with the competitors. Because I hope everybody listening to this, and I understand there are some people that, you know, whatever, they think Ice Wars is stupid and all that. And that's fine. That's your opinion. That's, you know, you're more than welcome to it. But for those that are fight fans and enjoy it, I really hope if you can't get to Edmonton, it's on Fight TV on pay-per-view. Ordered, it's $20, like seriously $20. Get a couple friends over, drink some beers in the basement and watch it. As Jay pointed out, you add up this, there's 8 bouts and then a cruiserweight tournament. He's like, dude, that's $2 a fight, legitimately, you know, and it's so, you know, and I mean, in this day and age when they're fighting's at a, you know, at an all-time low, granted, it's not a hockey game, but, you know, why not support it? And because the reason I also bring this up is, as I was at the last one and I was sitting ringside, thank you, Curtis Swanson, for the tickets. I would film maybe an entrance or I was just trying to film and try to get the vibe of what was happening live. And I'd film for, you know, 20, 30 seconds and then I'd upload it to Facebook. Well, I had a few people send me private messages and stuff and they're kind of put up the whole fight. And I just get back to them. I'm like, why don't you just buy it? Like, seriously, it's $20. Instead of sitting around and hoping for some pirated feed or somebody's going to put it up on their YouTube channel or someone's going to record it and then you can get the link from them later. It's like, do you always have to be a chiseler and, like, always looking for free shit all the time and whatever? Like, you just can't buck up the $20. You don't have, like, 3 other friends and pay $5 each. Like, I mean, I know times are tough for some, you know, for folks right now, but, I mean, seriously, like, come on, man, you know. And second of all, going forward, I'm going to do the same thing at Ice Wars too. I'll film and put stuff up on my Facebook Live while it's going on and stuff. But don't expect me to put up a whole fight because I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't do that to AJ. I'm not going to do that to the event. I'm not going to. I'm a bootlegger, baby. I'm not going to be Costanza filming it in the crowd. It's like, no, you can buy it like everyone else and support the cause. Because that's the thing. The more people that pirate, that Ice Wars 3 doesn't happen and it's gone. You know? So, like I said, support the cause and whatever. I mean, and if you don't like the event, I mean, well, you're probably not listening to this show anyway if you don't like the Ice Wars event. And again, that's fine if you don't. Whatever. I mean, I have people that have got a hold of me and said that they don't like it and it's stupid and whatever. And okay, fine. I disagree with you, but that's fine. Whatever. But, you know, for those that do watch it, I mean, you know, pay for it. Like, because I said, I'm sure there's some way out there that people have illegal streams. I'm sure there probably is, but, you know, whatever. Do you really? Like, come on, you know, we're all grown adults here. I think we can all afford it, you know, really. So for those that did out, I'm not going to call you out because I know you listen to the show, some of you. Don't bother sending me private messages telling me to film. Well, maybe just film the Swanson fight or something. No, I'm not going to, so don't even ask. But anyway, so Ice Wars 2 is happening next week, August 6th, in Edmonton, Alberta, at the River Cree Casino. Once again, like I said, Fight TV, $20, order it. And there's going to be a cruiserweight tournament and then 8 single bouts. And of the 8 single bouts, the main event fight is the tournament champion from last one, Daniel Amesbury. And he is taking on Curtis Swanson in the main event. And that is going to be an awesome fight. And I, like I said in the in our preview show, we all said it that I think this will be, in our opinion, I think this is going to be the best fight that Ice Wars has seen to this date. And it's going to be awesome. So definitely get the event, folks. You, believe me, it's great. It'll be cool. And I'm really looking forward to these two gentlemen that I got on the show. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. And it'll be fun. So I'm going to stop yapping here because we go fairly lengthy with both these guys. And yeah, guys. So this is obviously it's a Sunday episode. On Wednesday will be the Jay and Alec from the Five for Fighting podcast. Like I said, last night we recorded, but that'll be Wednesday's show, and it's a preview show, and we go down all the fights and whatever and give our 2 cents, and like I said, the beers were flying and, you know, and all that sort of fun stuff. You know, tried to get Swanee on the show, but we ended up with his answering machine, but we drunk dialed him, but what can you do? But no, it was a fun talk, and I always enjoy having those two jokers on the show, so that is what's coming up. And I am currently, you probably actually heard my phone bang a couple times. That is literally me trying to set up an interview for this week with a former player. And that will be the Sunday episode. Because Sunday, of course, I will be in Edmonton next weekend. So, but I still want to get an episode out for you guys. Like I always say, I'm a good teammate. I'm not going to leave the listeners hanging. I will have something for you on Sunday. If I can't get a guest, I will come up with a solo episode. There will be an episode next Sunday. I'm not going to record anything while I'm at Edmonton and blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to do that. No, I'm on vacation at that point, so I am not going to be. Now, if you're on social media, please follow Fourth Line Voice on Twitter as well as on Facebook. While I'm in Edmonton, I will be doing some videos, and I'm going to try to do some kind of some player stuff, some interviews with them, like just some on camera, how are you feeling, blah, blah, you know, and whatever, and I'm going to try to corner one of the judges and kind of get their feeling on like how they judge the fight and whatever, and I'll put that on my Facebook page and upload it to social media. I'd like to do some of that stuff, but overall, after the event is done, the Sunday and Monday when we're in Edmonton, I am not going to be doing, like, you know, I'll be doing stuff with my wife and going out around Edmonton and seeing friends and shopping and all that. I'm not going to be podcasting in the hotel room or anything. So I'm going to have an episode in the can, so to speak. So that'll come out on Sunday. And then, the following Wednesday will be my review of the whole deal. So, and I'll tell you some stories, and I'm sure some shenanigans will take place or something goofy will always seem to happen to me. So I'm sure I will have that to share with you guys. So that is what's on the docket here for the next couple episodes. But, yes, in the meantime, how about we get at it? These are my interviews with James Brooke, and then follow that with Dallas Otto. All right, guys, thanks, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday. All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, got a special guest, Ice Wars 2 competitor, James Donnie Brooks. James, how you doing today?
doing good. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Yeah, I know we've been talking about this for a while, and I know you've now signed up for Ice Wars 2 and start next week. And how's the training going?
It's good. A little different at 37 than 25, but it's been going well. My trainer, Mr. Will Warfield, has been pushing me pretty hard, and we've been practicing on the synthetic, so it's I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
Oh, right on. Well, before we get into Ice War, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about Ice Wars, obviously, and everything. But we're gonna give the folks some background. I mean, you played in the Federal League and over in Sweden and everything. So we gotta start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised? Where did you play your minor hockey?
Well, I'm from Chicago, Illinois. I grew up here playing, you know, travel hockey, double-A hockey here, Chicago Blues, and then I ended up playing for my high school, and, you know, went down to Springfield, played college down there in the ACHA, and then I had an opportunity to go over to Sweden, so I played a season split between Junior A Super Elite and Division II, which was definitely an experience. I got to see the difference between living in Stockholm and living in the country. But glad I went. It was something. It was definitely an experience. And I came back and just kind of bounced around the single-A minors here and there, the AHA and the AAHL, the Federal League. I think that's it. Might have gotten an EP game in there at some point. I can't remember. But, yeah, just did a bunch of single-A and, you know, battled to stay on the teams.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, you go from American high school hockey into college. When did the whole kind of, because as soon as you go to the AHL and the Federal League and stuff, I mean, you're throwing down, you're fighting. When did the whole fighting thing take in? And because, I mean, you're not fighting in high school and in college or in Sweden, I would think.
Yeah.
What happened? Were you always aggressive and wanted to, or what happened there?
A lot of it, I think, had to do with kind of where I grew up and my upbringing. I was a northwest side of Chicago guy. It's a real Irish-Polish neighborhood. Kids would fight all the time. I mean, there were fights every weekend. There were fights after school. It was just normal to be scrapping, and figured out pretty young that, you know, if I didn't want to get beat up, I had to do some beating up. And definitely got beat up along the way, but, you know, that's just kind of was part of my growing up. And playing hockey put me in situations where stick up for your teammates, stick up for yourself, you know. And even when, you know, growing up, when we weren't allowed to fight, when it was 3-game suspension for fighting, I'd get a random one here or there because, you know, that's just what happened. But I was never really like, you know, a fighter or the fighter. And really it didn't happen until I got cut from the Chicago Blaze for being a slob. I was out of shape and just overweight and didn't belong in the team. And they snipped me, and I ended up going down to Evansville. And Coach Collins said, "Brooksy, how do you feel about your shape?" I said, "I don't think I'm in shape." And he said, "So what are you going to bring to the table?" And I said, "Well, I'll fight anybody you want me to fight all season. You keep me here and I'll fight whoever you want me to fight. Like, win or lose, I don't care. I don't care who they are. Like, you point, I'll fight." And we made a deal. So I stuck around that season. I think it was 21 fights in 24 or 25 games. I learned a lot. I don't really like watching some of those videos because I feel like I've come a long way as a fighter. But, I learned a lot that season and kind of absorbed the role. And it just doesn't leave you. I mean, I can't go to men's league and not see, you know, I see somebody on my team getting the business from somebody, and it's like impossible to not go out there and stick up for them. It's just like ingrained in me. So that's kind of brought me here.
Well, there you go. When you were, you mentioned going over to Sweden. So you played college hockey and all that, and then you go over to Sweden. What did you think of the gameplay over there?
It definitely didn't suit my playing style. I've always been a like a grinder. Yeah, you know, I just want to go out there and work my bag off and muck it up in front of the net and, you know, scrap if I need to scrap. But, I've gotten to play just because of how hard I've worked, you know, not really because of the talent at any point. And over there, it was a much faster game. Nobody was telling you stops and starts. It was circles and passing and finesse. And, obviously it was a little harder to play the body because there's more space. But I did it. I went out there and, you know, played the American game on the big ice and made some friends through it. It was definitely different, and it definitely didn't suit my play style. So I just did a season and came home.
Yeah. Well, I guess that should have been actually my first question, is how did you even end up over there?
My dad was good friends with a man named Bob Krolak. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he did a Swedish-American exchange for kids for years, where he would bring Swedish teams over here and bring American teams over there, and they'd play games against each other. And Swedish families would host the American kids, and American kids would host the Swedish kids, and American families would host the Swedish kids. And my brother was part of that. He was actually Swedish families with Joachim Nordström, who's currently playing in the NHL. Actually, I think he's going to Russia this year, but he's been in the NHL and was a Blackhawk for a little bit, so that was pretty cool. But they did that exchange every year, and Bob asked my dad, he said, you know, how would you like to play in Sweden? And I took that opportunity in a heartbeat. You know, I didn't even care if I was the worst on the team. I just wanted to go. I wanted to be there and experience it and play hockey with Swedes. And, you know, it was an experience, that's for sure. I actually, I don't know if you want to hear a story about when I got there, but
of course.
I took 24 hours or so to get to Sweden. You know, I flew to London. I had like a 6-hour layover. Then I flew from London to Arlanda, Sweden. And then I had to take a train. I think it was a train into the city or a bus into the city. Maybe it was a train into the city and then another train to Orebro. And then I was supposed to get picked up in Orebro. So, you know, 24 hours later, I get off this train. I've got my hockey bag, my duffel bag, my backpack, two other bags I probably should have never brought, and my sticks. So I'm pretty much dragging everything. And I get off this train, and, you know, the train leaves, and I'm the only guy on this platform. It is pitch black, like dark out. There's one light on, and it's like flickering. And there's nobody around. It's just forest everywhere.
It was like every horror movie ever. Yeah.
Literally. So I'm sitting here, and I'm picturing myself on the globe, on the complete opposite side of where I came from. And I'm like, what do I do if nobody comes? You know, like, do I sleep here? Do I ditch my gear and start walking? If I start walking, which way am I going? You know, where's the town? It was just nothing. So I sat there for about 45 minutes, and I was probably starting to panic. And this Mercedes pulls up with these two kids in it. And this guy sticks his head out the window and goes, Brooke, Brooke. And I was like, me, that's me. So, you know, they helped me load my stuff up. I got in the back, and we drove 45 minutes back to Karlskoga, where I was supposed to be playing. And these guys didn't speak a lick of English. You know, they seemed like they were nice guys, but they weren't. Nobody in Karlskoga really spoke English. So they brought me back, and they dropped me off at this youth hostel. And they were like, you go in here, you be fine. So they dropped me off. They told me that this guy was going to show up to let me in, and they drove away. So here I am at the youth hostel sitting there for about an hour. And finally this guy shows up, and you know, big heavy set guy, I think his name is Leif. And I could smell him when he got out of the car, like 15 feet away. But he came up, he let me in, showed me this room, which was kind of strange. There was like a kid's bed that was like a train that you could sleep in. And obviously all of the outlets were Swedish European outlets. So I couldn't plug my phone in. I couldn't plug the computer in. I couldn't plug anything in, and there were no clocks. So I played solitaire on the computer till I fell asleep. Somebody was supposed to come and get me at 10 a.m. the next morning for practice. I woke up, nobody showed up. I had no idea what time it was. I knew it was past noon because the sun was past the middle of the sky, and I just started walking. And I walked into town, and it took probably 2 hours to find the town. And I ended up calling my dad, and he was like, where have you been? I've been waiting for you to call me for a long time. He made a phone call or two. They picked me up, and all of a sudden everything was like how it should be. But, man, the trip there was something else. And then I learned real quick that they don't really speak English in Karlskoga. So it was an eventful 3 months.
I was going to say, that first couple days, there's probably a few questioning, what am I doing with myself here? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was something, you know, but I ended up getting a room at the hotel there, and, you know, they got me an apartment, and, you know, everything kind of came together. Coach instituted English Mondays, which lasted as long as the coach was in the locker room. They were supposed to only speak English on Mondays in lieu of having an American on the team. But I don't know. I mean, you know, there were a lot of really good people there, and the hockey was great. But I spent, you know, 3 months there, and I remember calling my dad and saying, like, I got to come home. You know, there's nothing on TV to watch. I can't hang out with these guys because they're either working or in school. And it got to a point where I just didn't care if I played hockey anymore. I just wanted to come home. So he actually got me to back to Stockholm. And when I got picked up at the train station by a family that we know over there, the dad said, "You're not going home." He said, you're going to skate with this team. I know they've had some people leave and they need a physical player." And I said, "Okay." So he got me with another team in Stockholm, and I finished the season there, which was great because everyone spoke English in Stockholm. I mean, everybody. And I made a couple of really good friends, and it was a really, really awesome experience living in Stockholm for 3 months.
That's cool, man. So you come back, and at this point, like, are you throwing, do you want to play, like, North American pro, or are you kind of just done and let's get on with life? Or, because, like, I know you end up Chicago Blaze, but it's like, how did that all happen, and what were you thinking?
So, I was done when I came home. I wasn't playing hockey anymore. I was just happy to be home. I probably gained 40 pounds the first month I was back, just going to the bar and eating Chicago food. Every time I'd come home from hockey and take a break, I'd gain weight because Chicago food. I was done. And it wasn't until, I think, the following year, I got a phone call from my buddy who said, "Want to play semi-pro hockey?" I said, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, $50 a game, man. You just hop in the bus. We go up to Michigan. We'll play a game. They'll pay you $50. We'll come home." And I was like, "Sure, man, let's play hockey. Like, I didn't even care about the $50. I'm like, let's play." So turns out this was like a makeshift team in the AAHA, which had four teams in it at the time, and the Detroit team had folded. So the Chicago team was trying to get into the league for the following year, and they basically agreed to finish Detroit's away schedule to not hurt the revenue for the other teams. So played 14 games, found myself fighting a lot. And I can't remember how many. I probably fought 8 times or 9 times in those 14 games. I'd have to look at the sheet, but I fought a lot. And the following season, the Blaze turned into more than a makeshift team, but, you know, we had sponsors and equipment, and, you know, they brought in a real coach, and it was, you know, supposed to be legit, which it was for 2 months or so until they folded. And thankfully they cut me like 2 weeks before they folded, and I deserved to be cut. I mean, I was out of shape and I was a mess. So they cut me, and next thing you know, I'm in Evansville. This is a funny story. I was looking for teams to play for. I was trying to play again at that time, you know. And I went on the Evansville Iceman Yuku forum, and there was this thread called "Evansville Has No Toughness." And I made a Yuku login, and I commented, "Chicago Blaze just released James Brooks, and he has not signed anywhere." And I posted it, and I left and went to the bar. And 4 hours later, I had a Facebook message from John Reichert, the chief scout, asking me to call him in the morning. And in the morning, he asked me to come finish the season with them. So I ended up in Evansville, and that's how I got into that season of fighting three times.
Well, agent. There you go. You're laid it out. And, hey,
I thought it was hysterical that it worked.
Hey, you got to get a gig somehow, right? Yeah, well, like you said, that year with Evansville, you know, 24 games, 123 minutes, 20 tilts. But before, and at this point, well, I mean, I guess in Chicago, you had four fights in the 12 games. That's all they had listed. I mean, who knows, right? But I mean,
okay.
You probably had more than that, because probably trying to find box scores from that league would have been tough when they folded.
Yeah, I don't
stuff.
Know if it all went up, because I mean, I can probably list off 6 or 7 right now without really thinking about it, but whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it was like, this would sort of be your first time kind of, well, I guess, like you said, on street's one thing, but this is sort of your first time, I guess, whatever, for lack of being the enforcer, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I mean, and did you, how did you take to it? Like, was it sort of like, I mean, I know in Evansville, you kind of made the deal with the coach, like, "All right, I'll stay, I'll fight." But like, was your heart into it though? Like, were you like, "Okay, I guess," or were you kind of like, "Yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, hell yeah, let's do this," you know?
My heart was definitely in it. I mean, I had some good buddies on the team, and, you know, I really liked being there, you know. But there's definitely something to say about sitting on the bench all game and then getting the pat on the butt to go out and fight a guy who's been playing a regular shift and sweating. And yeah. I can watch videos, and I can see the difference in my fights, in the fights where there was some anger behind it or somebody did something, you know, extra egregious, or it was more than just like, you know, coach told me to go fight that guy, or I have to go fight that guy for nothing, you know, stuff like that. And as I played more, I got better, and I kind of earned that ice time. And it was much, I definitely like getting into it in the play and, you know, being part of the game, as opposed to just, you know, you get comfortable sitting on the bench and in the middle of the third period, you haven't seen a shift and you're just sitting there. Like, you're comfortable, you know, you're relaxing. And then all of a sudden you got to go scrap. And it's like, you got to, you know, you kind of got to get yourself going to that. But, you know, it was my role, and I, you know, the guys respected me for it, and, you know, they were good to me because of it. So I just felt like I owed it to them to scrap whenever I needed to scrap, you know?
Yeah.
And
well,
we ended up winning the championship that year, so I got a ring for those fights. So
yeah, I was going to say, they didn't stiff you on the ring though, did they? Did you get one?
I got a ring, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And honestly, before the playoffs started, and I kind of heard this like through the grapevine, but they had like a coaches and captains meeting before the playoffs about, like, you know, do we keep Brooks? Because, you know, a lot of times they gas the fighter right before the playoffs and, you know, bring in a skill guy and, you know, try to make that run. But I guess the captains were all like, no, he's fought too many times. He deserves to be here. Like, you know, I was there for it, and I got a ring for it. And, you know, I got a bunch of buddies that I'm sure when this is over, we still have a chat with all the Evansville guys on Facebook. So I'm sure when you post this, I'll be sharing the link with them. So what's up, boys?
Oh, that's awesome, man. And, I mean, we'll talk about some of the fights. I mean, speaking of Ice Wars, Chase Tippin, you fought him four times that year. What was it like fighting old Chase Tippin?
You know, I'd been in a few before I saw him the first time. And when I got to the rink, you know, on the way up there, everybody's like, oh, you know, you got to fight Tippin. Like, you fought everybody else. You have to fight Tip now, you know? And I'm like, who the fuck is Tippin? You know, like, I don't know who this guy is. And they're like, oh, you'll know. So, you know, we get out there, and it's obvious in the warm-ups, you know, who Tip is. He's bigger than everybody, big bear. And so I went up and stretched next to him, and I told him, I said, hey, I heard you're the guy to go with. And he laughed, and I was like, you going to give me a shot at the title? And he's like, yeah, sure. We'll see how the game goes, and we'll pick a time. And I said, all right, and had my warm-up, and then we were coming out at the beginning of the second, and both teams were kind of, I think we were waiting for the Zam to get off, or we were at the door early, and kind of made eye contact and, you know, nodded to it. And then I think we chatted at the red line for a second, but we agreed we were just going to go off the opening face off to the second. So we did. And he definitely won, but he didn't really connect with anything. Like, none of his punches were like really got me. And when I watched the video, I mean, he clearly beat me. And I still had a lot to learn at that time about fighting big dudes and, you know, really fighting. But in the moment, I didn't feel like I really got beat up. So we're headed back to the box, and I'm already asking him for another go. And he's looking at me like I'm crazy. So he's like, yeah, all right, I guess, you know. So third period, I think it was like 5.5 minutes to go. I know there was more than 5 minutes to go because he chirped me for not waiting till under the 5 minute mark, but I asked him to go again, and we dropped him. And I had it in my mind that I was just going to go shot for shot with him. You know, I wasn't even going to like play defense. I was just going to throw. And that turned out to be a really bad idea, 'cause I think he caught me with like the first punch, like square in the face, and just exploded my nose. But I hung on and tried to keep going, and he ended up landing two more uppers in my nose before we called it quits. And I was leaking everywhere. I mean, it was bad, but yeah, we did the two that game, and then we played each other twice again that season, and I went both of those times. Each time got a little better, but you know, he got me all four times, so maybe we'll get another shot at Ice Wars 3 or Ice Wars 4.
Yeah, there you go. You never know. Well, another name, and of course, he was around the he's been around the Federal League for a while and bounced around, and Chris Affinati.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I think you.
Yeah, Effie's a Chicago guy. He's a good friend of mine. I'm you know, I really like Effie, but he's running one of the training centers over here, actually where my old high school team was at, and man, what a warrior. He's, I would say Chris Affinati's the toughest man I know, and not necessarily because he gives it, but I mean, he can just take it all day. And I know, cause I've punched him square in the forehead, like as hard as I possibly can. And he just keeps coming at you. So, you know, but not just a tough guy, but just a great dude. I mean, one of the only guys you'll see wearing a C and consistently fighting, you know, locker room guy there for his teammates. I mean, you really can't say anything more, you know, anything better about Chris than just who he was in the locker room and who he was to his teammates, you know?
No, absolutely. And, yeah, as we're sitting here talking about, I got to get that guy on the show. Why haven't I gotten him on the show
yet? Oh, yeah, 100%.
What am I doing? Yeah.
Get him on. I'm sure he can tell you some stories. He's got a heck of a resume. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, like you said, you guys win it that year, and but once again, I mean, you know, Madison folds, the Blaze fold, the Detroit team folds, Western Michigan. Are you kind of like at this point, like, I mean, you're winning and you win the championship, but are you sort of like, what are we doing here? Like, did you have any designs on like maybe trying out in the, like the Southern Pro League or going anywhere else, or were you just sort of like happy where you were?
You know, when I was in Evansville, I got there and I was heavy. I was out of shape. And a couple of the guys on the team were like, dude, what are you eating? Like you got to change this up, you know? And so I learned a lot about diet and, you know, how to take care of myself. And I lost I lost 40 pounds from December to March or, yeah, I mean, it was real quick. It was like 4.5 months and I lost like 40 pounds. Just dieting and following the instruction of some of the guys on my team, and I got a lot better. I mean, by the end of the season, I was good enough to play a regular shift with them. I didn't because other guys had earned it first, but you know, and I understood that and I was fine with that. But I got to a point where when they threw me out there, I wasn't a liability, and you know, it was to the point where I'd get a shift in the second and I'd go out there, you know, balls to the wall, more energy than anybody else. And then the fans would be like, why don't they play Brooks more? He's got so much energy, not realizing it's because I played one shift. But,
yeah.
You know, I got better and I got to a point where like I wanted to play hockey. So my mindset after Evansville was, what am I going to do next year? Where am I going to go play? Like I want to get to a point where I'm playing a regular shift and where I'm putting up points. You know, that's what I wanted. I didn't want to just be sitting on the bench and scrapping. Cause I, you know, how many years can you do that? I mean, some of these guys who do it in the LNH for 10 years, I mean, all the respect in the world, but I don't know if my body would hold up to that, you know? So, yeah, I just wanted to get on another team the next year or wherever and just be, you know, more of an asset to the team than just throwing punches. So
yeah, and you know, obviously, unfortunately, the Evansville team, I would assume, folded that year after you won. And then
they went up to the Central League the following year. I think they either did one or two in Central and then went to the Coast and then they moved down to Florida. So
yeah.
Now they're the Jacksonville Icemen. But they didn't invite anybody back to camp. You know, actually, I think they invited one of our guys back to camp. But it wasn't just an open invite to the team that won the championship to come back and try out for the Central team. And I wasn't one of the guys who got the invite. So I knew I was out of Evansville, you know, maybe a month or two after the season ended. I knew I was finding another place or I was done playing hockey.
Yeah, and I mean, you played in Queen City for a bit for the three games, and then Michigan,
yep,
and whatever, and then that's it. I mean, it has you listed playing just four games that year. Was that sort of, that was the end of it?
Well, I was in Cincy for, I think I was in Cincinnati for 2 months. It was a really bad situation. I'm not going to go naming names and trashing people, but the guy who was running that was just, he was not good for it. And there was payment promises and then not payment promises. And then, hey, if you drive, you know, six guys to the game tomorrow because the bus isn't here, we'll reimburse you this much for gas. And then I think he gave me a bag of quarters or something. I mean, it was just a mess, and the payment wasn't coming like it was supposed to, and I just had to get out of there. I think I just left, honestly. I remember there being drama, and I think I just left because they weren't paying. And the coach was great. We had Dwayne Zinger as a coach, and he was solid. And a lot of guys I played with that, you know, I really liked, but I just couldn't be there and play for free. You know, like my parents weren't sending me $1 million every week to get by. You know, they've always supported me, but you know, it wasn't just like an open checkbook. You know what I mean? So. You know, I had to get out of there, and at the time I was living in Evansville, and so I went back home to Evansville and was there for a little bit and decided to come home. And at that point I said, like, if I'm going to keep playing hockey, I got to get in shape. I got to like dedicate to this, and I got to decide, like, this is it. So I got it in my head that the following season would be, you know, my last like real push at playing hockey. And, I dropped so much weight. I got down to like 210 or 205, and I was in like really good shape. Went out to Vermont and did Vermont tryouts out there, and all the guys went out and partied the night before tryouts, and I just stayed home and slept. So I got up the next morning, and I was flying out there compared to everybody else, and the guys were giving me compliments and stuff. So our coach in Vermont told me he didn't want me to do as much fighting. He wanted me to play third line center and learn the defensive center role and make that what I pride myself in, and just get into scraps when, you know, when they're needed. Cause we had Tony Pisano on the team and Morgan James, and they were both 6'5", 6'6", like, you know, 250 pounds of meat. So, you know, I didn't have to go out there and settle any scores. We had, you know, real, giants to do that. So, but yeah. And then that year I bounced around from Vermont to Thousand Island cause Vermont folded. And then, 20 games in Thousand Island, I think, or 21 games.
Yep.
And they traded me to Danville, and I finished up in Danville with 10 games or so there.
Did
it was an interesting year.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is the first year of what they call the Federal Hockey League. Did you notice any difference between the Federal League and the All-American League that you had come, or that it switched over? I mean, I guess it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other, but was there any noticeable difference?
The Fed seemed more put together. There were more teams, and it just had more of a legit feel to it. But I think with all the single A leagues, and you know, I think probably the Southern Pros the exception, but with all those single A leagues that I played in, and the ones that were around just before, and you know, at the same time as me, it's just a crapshoot where you're at. You know, you go to Evansville, and I mean, they took really good care of us. We had a locker room, you know, we had decent housing. I mean, you know, they took care of us. Then we'd show up in Battle Creek and find out that the guys hadn't been paid, that there's three guys in a room. And, you know, we'd hear these horror stories about some of these other towns where that's just not how it was happening. So single A to me has always been like, well, where are you? And yeah, that's what the experience is like, you know? And I think when you make that step to double A, it kind of evens out where, you know, there's like a floor to what everything's like, you know, it's not going to get worse than this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's not like when the paychecks come out, it's a gumball rally to the bank, right? The first guys there get paid, the last guys don't, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, did you ever have any, I mean, you had to have had some, like, bus stories where...
Yeah, I spent New Year's in a gas station with the Iceman because the bus broke down.
Oh, good times, there you go.
They were checking the gas with a broomstick. We had this bus driver. We were leaving for a road, and he took us to the other side of town, and nobody knew where we were going because it wasn't the right route. And we ended up in this sketchy neighborhood, and he parks on the street, and he gets out, and we're all watching him, and he walks like a block down the road, and then he makes a left, and because of the way the houses were, when he walked down that block to the left, you could see him like behind the houses, and he goes into this house that I can only imagine what they were doing in this house. I mean, it was just run down and just beat up as could possibly be. And he's in there for like 10 minutes and, you know, he comes out and he looks both ways and he's got his hands in his pockets. So I'm like, oh my God, like what is happening right now? I'm supposed to be playing pro hockey right now, you know? And, he came back and drove us to West Michigan. So never found out exactly what he was doing, but, yeah, I mean, there were definitely some bus trips. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you want to be a hockey player, right? Yeah. But,
yeah, it's when I was in Vermont, we broke down in Danbury, about a mile from the rink, and we broke down because we went down a hill, and the hill was too steep that where when the bus went to go straight, it out. The front of the bus and the back of the bus were on pavement, and the wheels were in the middle. So we had to climb out the emergency window and carry our bags a mile to the rink to play the game. The entire time hearing from Danbury that they weren't going to push the game time. So that was something, walking through a really sketchy neighborhood in Danbury with our hockey bags as a team. But, you know, it's all part of the single A life, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of the single A life, I mean, before we're done here, your first year in the Federal League, like you said, with Vermont and Thousand Island, Danville, and, One of the names that kept coming up on your fight card was legendary, and he played a long time in the Quebec League, was Paul Schantz. You guys seemed to find each other quite a few times.
Yeah, he hated me. I don't even know what to say. You know, it started with I'm trying to remember the guy. He was the first liner on their team, Deschalet, maybe? But he skated by the bench and had some words for us, and I had some words back, and then he called me out, and he said, you want to go? And naturally, I was the 10th forward in Thousand Island. He was a first-line center, so I jumped right out there. You know, even if I get beat up, it's good for our team. We both go to the box 5 minutes, you know. They're down line one center. So I went out to go home, and, I mean, almost immediately I've got Dodgene poking me with his stick, asking me what I'm doing, and Chance is coming after me, and I'm like, I don't even know who these guys are at the time. I'm just like, you know, I had heard a story or two, but realistically, like, I didn't know anything. And I'm like, what? He asked me to fight. I said, okay, like, you know, but that was enough. And every single time we played them, Chance followed me around, hooking me, cross-checking me. He dumped me from behind and pushed my helmet off, and you know, I kept telling him, like, I'll go you, man. Like, let's just square up off a face-off. Like, let me play some hockey, and if we're going to fight, let's fight. But, I mean, he was, like, locked on to me every game, all game. So we had two actual fights and then two other ones that I think were listed as fights but were more of a, like, wrestling match or, you know, a tie-up where we ended up not really throwing punches. So, but, yeah, I mean, the guy's got more fights than anybody else, at least he did when I was playing. And that's probably my biggest name on my fight card is probably him. But, man, I mean, that guy he hated me.
Following that year in the Fed, was it sort of just, I know you played the one game there in Pennsylvania with the Blues. And, I mean, at that point, was it just, you know, I got to get on with my life here and enough is enough?
Yeah, I think that game I played for them in Danville because it was a couple hours away and they were, I think they were just filling a folded team schedule and I was just played a game for that. But yeah, I mean, after that, when the season ended in Danville, you know, Matt McIlvain was the coach. He was talking me up about plans for the summer and double A camp in the fall and things like that. And, I really wanted to go back and I wanted to do that. But I went home and, you know, I had to work and worked a lot and gained 30 pounds or so. And then I actually met my wife that summer, and it just kind of, like, you know, by the time it was time for camp, I wasn't going back to camp any less than the guy I was leaving Danville. You know, I'd already done that. I'd already proven myself to people and, you know, just gotten better at hockey, that I wasn't going to go back and be the out of shape guy again who was just scrapping. You know, it just wasn't in the cards. So I stayed home. I kept working and started making babies. So here we are. I got four of them now, and you know, they're my life now.
Well, it's, I mean, and you're coaching hockey and stuff too, right?
Yeah, I'm the hockey director for a combined high school program just north of where I live. And I took that program over a couple of years ago with 14 kids, and we've grown it to what's projecting to be about 50 this year. So we're going to have a varsity and two JV teams. And, you know, that's been going really well. And then I'm also going to be coaching a Pee Wee team with another club. So it's going to be full-time hockey this year. But that's, you know, that's what I want to do. That's where I want to be. It's, I don't know. It's in me. So,
well, you got the bug, right? Yeah. So, I mean, but that's cool, man. I mean, you're growing the program there, and you know, and you got to, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you played some, you know, played pro hockey. You got to see Sweden, and yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I'm really liking this high school coaching gig. You know, we're really getting to help these kids move on and go to college, and you know, find their career paths, and you know, be supportive of that. And our program's more than just like, hey, we're going to make your kid a better hockey player. Like, we want them to leave having all those values that we got growing up playing hockey, and you know, learning things like accountability and responsibility and teamwork. And you know, we'll have like life lesson day through the year. We teach the kids how to tie a tie, and you know, other stuff like that, so that the parents see like, we don't just care about like your kid, you know, coming here and scoring goals so that we win the season. But, you know, we want to see them come back in 5 and 10 years and be successful human beings. Because at the end of the day, most of these kids are not going to the NHL, and they got to take more from hockey than just their, you know, a better slap shot or a better wrist shot or something like that. You know, they got to come out of the sport with things that are going to help them as adults and in real life. So that's been kind of our big focus and our push. And it's been nice the last couple of years being able to see these kids go off and play at the colleges that they want to and stuff like that. So,
well, hey, no, you're that's awesome, man. And I mean, you're giving back, and sounds like you're really growing it there. And yeah, no, I completely agree with your statement there and your mission statement. And no, that's cool. But
well, thank you.
Here we go. We got to get into the last bit here, of course. August 6th in Edmonton, Alberta, on Fight TV pay per view. Everybody tune in. $20. Get your friends. James Brooke is rolling in, and you've signed up for Ice Wars too. What sort of led you to deciding to go into this?
Well, Dan Amesbury has been a buddy of mine since we played together in Vermont, and he tried to recruit me a year or so ago, when they were just getting this started. And I didn't really know much about it. I hadn't heard about incentives or, you know, stuff that covered costs and things like that. And, you know, to me it was, hey, come fight the toughest guys you could find for nothing super far away in Canada. So I opted out. You know, I didn't think that was something that I was going to fly with the family and the wife and the schedule and all that. But when I saw the fight cards come out for Ice Wars 1, and I started YouTubing the guys, and I knew some of them, and I'm like, man, I really should have done this. So I actually talked to Ames, and he told me somebody had dropped out, and they were trying to fill the spot. And I was instantly like, I want it. But at the time, I didn't have a passport, and that it wasn't getting one in 5 days, and then getting there. But since then, I've been training, and you know, blew up AJ and everybody else. Just like, get me in. I'll fight whatever weight class you want me to fight at. I'll get there. Just, you know, tell me who I'm fighting. Tell me where. Tell me when. And I've just been pushing myself every day since then to drop a few pounds and get my cardio going. Obviously, the cardio is real important. So, you know, that's really what I've been working on. And I'm ready to go. I'm excited. I got a bunch of friends here excited. I got a bar near my house, like our hometown bar, Jeff's Public House, is hosting our watch party. So they're going to have a drink special, and hopefully we'll pack that place with buddies, and we can kind of bring this Ice Wars thing to popularity in Chicago.
No, absolutely. And I mean, whatever, we're a week out. I mean, by the time this comes out, I'm sure it'll be released. So, I mean, you know, we can say it, but I mean, you're fighting Corey Allen as your bout that you're having. And of course he fought in the first one. So, I mean, you obviously have the, I don't want to say the advantage, but you did get to see him perform in the first one.
Yep.
Are you kind of happy that it's a single bout, or were you kind of like, did you want to do the tournament thing, or are you happy just with the single fight?
I definitely would have liked to do the tournament. I don't think I could have cut to 205, so that's kind of why I didn't even push for that. It'd be nice to be fighting for, you know, for a championship or a crown. And maybe we'll be in the next one or the next one where my weight class suits. But honestly, I mean, I'm excited to go and do the one fight and kind of take it all in and hang out with some guys I haven't seen in years and, you know, meet some other guys. You know, it's probably good, you know, 2 months of training, one fight. I would have done more. I told AJ, if anybody backs out, you know, last minute and he needs to throw somebody in for a second one, I would do it. But, you know, I'm an optimist and I'm happy to be going and happy to be a part of it. And I think this is, you know, it's a new sport that's going to be just keep growing in popularity. So, you know, my hope is that I'll be fighting before, Keegan McGraw, because I'd, like to be the first American with an Ice Wars win. So that's been my motivation. And, just keep thinking about in 20 years when this thing's, you know, huge like UFC is now, that I'll be able to say I was the first guy who got the first American to get a win at Ice Wars. So that's been my motivation. Now we just got to get there.
Hey, there we go. Have you had a chance to I mean, I already know the answer, but for the listeners, have you had a chance to work on the synthetic, and what do you think of it?
Yeah, actually, BTE training out at the Gurney Mills Mall just north of Chicago here was gracious enough to give me the ice, you know, almost whenever I need it to train. And it's, I don't like skating on the synthetic. Fighting on the synthetic's a little bit easier, but it's been great getting out there and just like practicing on it and getting adjusted to it. And I'm sure there'll be a little adjustment when I go to Edmonton, because you know, none of them are identical. But just being able to get on it and train on it and having the support from them has been great.
So, I was going to ask you, like, even with your hockey and stuff, did you ever take any boxing or anything growing up?
You know, I did about 2 months of MMA before my second year of college, just to get myself back in shape. But nothing, you know, I didn't fight and do anything, you know, serious with it. It was more just for the training. And then back in 2012, maybe, before I went off to Vermont, there was this thing called the Bartenders Brawl. So they were going around trying to get bartenders in the city to fight in what was a kickboxing match. So I signed up for that, and I actually got a buddy of mine who called them and requested to fight me. So him and I went and had a fight, and I was lucky enough to go 1-0 on my amateur kickboxing record. So yeah, no, it was fun. We had like 100 friends come and watch, and we're both not kickboxers. And we did our training on our own. So when we got there and they were like laying it all down, all these guys had been going to training with them, but we'd been training together. So they said, you have to throw 4 kicks per round or you're disqualified. And, you know, because we looked at each other, we're like, we just won't kick. We'll just box. You know, we'll just agree to that. No kicks. And they were like, you have to kick. If you don't kick, you're disqualified. So we're like, all right, the beginning of the fight, we'll just, you know, we'll just do like 4 like fake kicks at each other, you know, and then we'll fight, because we hadn't trained for kickboxing, you know, at all. So we get out there and we line up, and he comes in and he throws a kick and he kicks me square in the nuts. So, you know, I boom, like 3 seconds in, I just hit the ground, and, you know, I look up, and I mean, he kicked me like right in the nuts. So I'm on the ground like, you know, and I look up and all my friends are at like eye level because they're, you know, not in the ring, and they're just screaming at me, get up, you pussy. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, so they tell me you got 5 minutes, you know, I took my time and then I got up and we squared back up and I came in and I went to throw my kick and completely unintentionally kicked him right in the balls. So he went down. And he spent his time on the ground, and everybody was screaming at him to get up. And we ended up not throwing any more kicks the rest of the fight, and they didn't disqualify us. So I think they figured it was just better to let us just box it out. But, you know, we had a good fight. He beat up my ribs. I got a few more headshots in than he did, and I got the decision. So it was that was my only real boxing or anything like that kind of.
Well, I just laughed because they do a bartender brawl. You'd think they would just make it a tough man boxing contest. Why all of a sudden are we throwing kickboxing into this? Like, I don't know.
I think it had to do with the sanction. I think that was the sanction they could get. Like something about the kickboxing and wearing the pads that you had to wear on the shins, and it was something about what allowed them to have it happen. And because I felt the same thing. I'm like, well, kickbox? Like, who kicks?
Yeah.
I don't kick.
I just laughed that you just signed yourself up for these things. This is, so you've been in the bartender's brawl, and we're going to take it to Ice Wars 2 in Edmonton now. And hey, man.
It just seemed like the appropriate thing to do. But,
it's a natural progression.
I'm in this, and I can't. Well, yeah, and I mean, and I'm only 2 months into, like, really getting ready for this, which, I mean, I'm going to be fine August 6th, but I'm excited for, like, next June or July after spending 6 or 7 months preparing, you know, because it'll be a whole other level at that point. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you, like,
that I wouldn't like to be.
Well, I was going to say, like, win, lose, or draw, I mean, this isn't just a one-off thing and whatever. Like, you want to, obviously, the sounds of it, like, continue, train, and, like, I'm going to do this again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many years I'll do it for. You know, like I said, I'm going to be 37 here in a few weeks, and, who knows when it'll be time to call it quits. But I definitely want to do it again, and I definitely want to do it a few times, and have a few opponents, and, at least make a splash before I hang them up. So if we can keep making it work and, keep getting support like I've gotten this time from sponsors and things like that, then we'll keep doing it. So.
Yeah, you guys have been putting out the sponsor. You got a few sponsors?
Yeah, no, I've had some people reach out to me. A buddy of mine that I grew up with has a shipping company that he gave me his sponsorship. He gave me some money, and I'm going to have his logo all over my pants. And another buddy of mine does mental training for athletes and video training for hockey players. His company is Deceptive Hockey, so he sponsored me. And my old boss and his restaurants, I mean, a lot of people have come in to support me, so it's pretty cool.
That's excellent. No, it's always great to have the support. And well, man, hey, I dig the enthusiasm. I love it. Coming out 37 years old, let's give her a shot. And I look forward to meeting you down in Edmonton, and good luck to you, man. I look forward to seeing it.
I appreciate you having me on. It's an honor. Thank you.
All right. Well, and with that, folks, there we go. James Brooks, tune in August 6th. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, hopefully I didn't talk too much.
All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, special guest, Ice Wars 2 competitor, Dallas Otto. Dallas, how are you doing today?
Not so bad. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you very much for coming on. And for those wondering, Dallas was actually in the first one, but he was the referee for the first one. And now you got rid of the stripes and you're putting on the gloves. Well, before we get into the whole Ice Force thing, let's give the folks some background, and we'll kind of talk about your playing days, and then we'll get into Ice Force. But got to go at the beginning. Where were you born and raised, and where did you play your minor hockey?
Oh, I've lived all over the place. I was born in Edmonton, but probably played the most defining years of my hockey career. I bounced all around Alberta with my parents work and things like that. I'd say the most defining parts of my minor hockey were definitely in Okotoks and at Calgary area.
Then
moved to Kelowna and did my thing out there, and kind of ended up coming back to God's country, I'd say.
Well, that was, yeah, it was kind of interesting. I mean, like you said, you played your minor hockey and AAA and stuff in Alberta. Were you always sort of, did you sort of lean to the physical side of hockey? Were you always kind of an aggressive kid?
Oh, yeah, always. that was just the way things panned out for me. Hockey never came easy to me. Like, I watch these little kids now that's skating, and the things they can do with the puck is just incredible. And that really, like, I had to work very hard just to be able to skate at a AAA level and things like that. And the size came naturally to me. I was always a bigger kid growing up, much bigger, and then everybody kind of caught up a little bit as we got into the midget years and stuff, but still I'd say bigger than most hockey players at least. And so yeah, I used that to my advantage and had a bit of an aggressive side. And I always liked the role of kind of a do-it-all third, fourth liner guy that I think is that those guys are the backbone of a team that they'll die for their teammates, things like they'll block shots, things like that. That's always what I wanted to be a part of, and I just love being a part of the team. So the skill never came easy to me, but the physicality definitely did.
Yeah, well, it's like you might not be able to score, but you can always hit somebody, right? So it's like...
Exactly.
Yeah, well, like you said, you head out to BC. Did you and you played in the I always want to call it the Rocky Mountain League, but the Kootenay KI Junior League, yeah. Junior B. And did you try out for any BCHL teams?
Oh yeah, I did the whole BCHL WHL stint. Trying out and going all over the place, spring camps, and really I mean, all I wanted to do was be a hockey player. So I really gave it my all. It'd be weekend after weekend during hockey season and things like that and stuff. And I got looks, but it never panned out for me. I never seemed to be quite up to the level that the BCHL, it was more leaning towards the skill league. And, they still had very tough big guys, but they could also play hockey. And I could play hockey, but never it seemed quite to the level that they wanted. And that's just life. So my next best bet was the KI, and I had a great time there. I spent my time in Kamloops, and I loved it. I had a great coach, Ed Patterson, and he was a tough guy back in the day too. And he kind of seemed to noticed me and recognized what I was useful for, and I had a leadership skills that he was able to really bring out of me and things like that. And I had a great time in Kamloops. It was one of the best times of my life, I'd say, playing hockey there.
Well, when you went to the WHL camps and the BC camps, were you like you said, you're obviously kind of okay, like maybe speed wise I can't keep up or whatever, but was it like, did you make a conscious decision like, okay, I'm gonna try to fight my way on? Like, did you do that?
I tried to fight everything that moved at these camps. Like, I probably looked like a fucking idiot, honestly, running around like a chicken with his head cut off. But I knew my whole game plan was just find the team that's like, okay, this guy is willing to die out there for his team. He'll give everything. And I was fighting every WHL camp I went to and BCHL camp. I had to have a good fight, and I had to leave an impact somehow, because it wasn't going to be on the score sheet. So you got to stand out, right? And
yep.
I was always trying to get in a fight, yeah.
Did in terms of camps, did you get into a couple fights? Did you fight any name guys?
Like guys on the team? I don't know. There's a guy that stands out called Colton Carpenter. When I was in Prince George, he was kind of a name guy. I had a really good fight against him. But honestly, at those camps, even their tough guys, like lots of times their coaches, they would want to look after their guys, right? So they'd say no fighting, no breaking hands in camp, things like that. And so I'd ask and ask and ask, and I know I was in Calgary Canucks camp, and they had a tough guy, Zach McNeil, and he just said, like, I would, man. Like, I see what you're trying to do, but I can't, like, I'm going to get cut if I get in a fight. And that's the way it was for sort of tough guys in these camps is,
yep,
even if you're on the team, you're almost dispensable. So it's like that's just the way hockey is kind of taking a turn to.
I was going to say, Dallas, you were born 15 years too late.
That's what I've been told, I guess.
If you played in the 90s, you'd have a field day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, too bad, but that's just the way the cookie crumbled.
Well, when you got out to Kamloops and you're in the KI with the Storm, how was your experience in the league overall? And they've gone to full cages in that league now, haven't they?
Yeah, I never played junior anywhere with full cages. When they did that, I actually moved to Alberta to play junior B in Alberta because I would never be able to play. I couldn't play in a cage again. I hated it in minor hockey. I've had more head injuries and facial injuries from a fucking cage than wearing a visor my whole life.
Well,
knock on wood, but
that's funny because that's where I was going with the question, because I'm looking at your timeline and I'm like, I know they put cages in, and it's all of a sudden he's telling me how much he likes Kamloops, but next thing I know he's back in Alberta. So I'm thinking something happened there, but okay.
Yeah.
In terms of the fighting in the, well, because 36 games, 100 minutes, 44 games, 119 minutes. I mean, so, you know, you're staying busy. In terms of the KI, was it pretty easy to find a fight?
It all depended. For the most part, my time in the KI, or still every team had a good tough guy that would want to go.
Yeah.
Towards the end, and I've totally watched it. Like it was. I've been in a kind of a crazy position my career, because the KI, like Trav's time, was super tough guys, unlimited fights every night, things like that, and it's tapered off until now. It's like midget. It's like watching midget hockey. I would say there's no discernible difference from minor hockey to junior B anymore. There's bigger guys in around, older guys. Like you're playing. I don't know if it's just me or what, but I know coming up from midget into junior, you're playing men with beards, and they're all like junior B. They're probably working a mechanic's job or changing tires or whatever. So they're all tough, grouchy, blue collar guys. And then all of a sudden it kind of got more and more expensive to play. And, so lots of these tough blue collar guys just said, fuck it. Right. And, it's kind of part of the past of the KI, but, in my time it was, every team had a guy usually, there was always talk, I guess, at least around the league of who's doing who, who's going to go who, and bad blood, things like that. But yeah, it was good. Like for my time, I'm glad I got out when I did, and I'm glad I got in when I did too. So
yeah, like in terms of the fighting, like I've had lots of guests on, and I kind of just, you know, when did you start becoming comfortable? Like I've always said, like some guys when they first start fighting, it's kind of like, you know, the tears of rage thing, right? Like they're just they black out and just whatever. When did it kind of like, you know, did you start thinking about it? Did it ever, when you calmed down, did it ever slow down for you? And it's like you could think through the fight, or is it still sort of blackout and swing for your life?
I totally get what you're saying there, and honestly, back in the KI days when I was young and crazy, it would be blackout and swing like mad, just, and I like to say I've got a good chin on me and stuff like that, maybe tough Alberta farm boy, but I never really got comfortable, because I still in my time in junior B could only get in three fights without getting a suspension. Then the fourth fight I'd get two games, and then the fifth fight I'd get three games, and then any more fights after that, and the league would review you and stuff like that. So they were still so few and far between. I'd say it was probably my last year in the KI that I got at least a little comfortable to open my eyes and slow down in a fight.
Yeah.
And then in the HJ and now in senior, I've noticed, an improvement in my abilities, through constant kind of use, as well as maybe wisdom in old age.
Yeah.
I got this year I got in a couple of good fights, and you can watch in my videos and stuff like that. It's not so much like my whole aspect was like hit first and hit them hard. But now it's like I can grab and wrestle with them and try and pick a punch a little bit. And when I am picking punches, I notice I do a lot better because, it's a hard punch, and if it lands, it's gonna connect, and I can make sure that I also don't get punched too many times either. So, yeah, I'd say it's a combo of getting enough under my belt and maybe a little years of wisdom.
Yeah, it's experience, and exactly. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Lots of these guys at like Ice Wars and stuff, just seeing the penalty minutes that they're putting up if they're 30, 35 years old, it was just like, it's unobtainable for a guy my age, really, just because you can't get that many majors per game. If they could get two majors in a game, then they're dominating me, right? And so,
well, that's the thing. Like a guy like Curtis Swanson, when he played in the LNAH, he had 70 fights in one year.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? No, it's like they're doing two a night. It's crazy. I couldn't imagine what that guy's hands look like. But it's just the minutes really don't even come close.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, and that's why I've always found interesting just doing this show. Like, you go from a Swanson or a Morasti or a McIntyre, and I've had them on, and, you know, they grew up in the, you know, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and then to have a guy like you on that was, like, you know, 2015, 16, 17, so a completely different generation, and like you said, hockey's completely different. The mindset of around hockey is completely different at this point. Even more so now compared to when you were even playing junior, like you said, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting as the interviews go. Yeah, just how things have changed and the way it's looked at. But so when you get to Okotoks there, because you're like, I'm out of here with this full cage business, so you head back to Alberta. What were the big differences in the leagues?
Definitely the age, because in the KI, you're only allowed 5. 20-year-old players. In the HJ, you were allowed as many 20-year-olds as you wanted, and then 5 21-year-olds. And that was another good thing of kind of it all played out well, because the cages came into factor, and then if I left my 20-year-old season, I would be able to play a 21-year-old season in Alberta. So that's more hockey for me, because once junior was over for me, it's like, oh, here's fucking beer league, and I could never play beer league, and that's just why I'm in the ranch land now, which I love, and God bless it. But everything worked out well for me. But definitely, and I would have said too that the HJ teams in Alberta would have dominated 99% of the BC junior teams off of size and kind of that old school mentality alone. I take a hard working, grinded out team any day of the week over a skilled, selfish team.
Well, yeah, what's the old saying, right? Five plumbers will always beat five engineers. So it's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
So it's like, well, and it's, yeah, so, I mean, you get to Okotoks. Now, is the league, now, in terms of, like you said, it's half visor still. Was the fighting rule still very similar to BC?
Yeah, it was the same fighting rule. There was more fights than in BC. The HJ was always known as kind of, and Alberta in general, was always known compared to BC, in my time at least. I mean, the KI was the tough junior B league forever and ever. But in my time, it was always the HJ was the go-to tough league. So I fit in right at home, actually. Yeah, I fell right into place, and I loved it.
Yeah, like even like back in the, well, in I thought it would be the 90s and stuff, even junior A, like the Alberta AJ and the SJ were always sort of like, you know, the blue collar, you know, and BC was more like the, you know, whatever, the scholarship league, right? Or the, and that's always kind of where it was viewed at, right? Like, so, I mean, both, all the leagues had obviously good players and tough players, but it was just, that's how it was viewed, right? Yeah, in hockey terms, and Manitoba as well. But yeah, it's, Yeah, it's just out west, right? You just get the, it's farmers, right?
It's kind of crazy. It's just like the farmer, oil field kind of blue collar mentality. All these people come from, it seems like, I mean, I might be biased, but it's going from place to place and getting to know people all over. It's like your Alberta and Saskatchewan people, minus northern BC, those are tough bastards up there.
Yeah.
But like Dawson Creek, everything, it's all tough guys. But the BC, like the lower mainland, it's all very white collar, kind of prim and proper compared to the SJ. And that's all. And I'm saying like upbringing of these players as well is it, they got blue collar parents that are working, and it's just a different mentality everywhere, right?
So yep, it is, and
that doesn't apply to everybody. So
no, I mean, the, I mean, no, not, nothing's absolute, but I mean, yeah. But no, that's a very good, yeah. I mean, and it's not a slight to anybody. It's just that's the way it is, right? Like
yeah.
Well, so
you saw it in tournaments in minor hockey, like the. BC teams would try and skate circles around a team from Lethbridge, and those boys are corn-fed strong from standing up in that wind, and they don't take it. So, yep. So I always got a kick out of it, right?
No, absolutely. Well, yeah. Well, like you say, you wrap up your junior, and you know, never mind beer league because there would probably be banned for life in beer league. So we're gonna go play some senior hockey, and for a lot of my listeners, I think the senior hockey, you know, is in some of the areas, in some of the leagues, it's like, it's, you know, it's really strong. And there's a lot of good players. And like you said, a lot of ex-junior players, ex-pro players. I mean, I noticed nearly you had Kyle Sheen and guys like that. And I mean, so you had extra pro, you had pro players come back and, you know, come home or they're working, especially in Alberta, they're working in the fields and rigging and all that. And so you can get some tough dudes in these senior leagues, man, and they don't mess around. And, how have you found the senior hockey?
It's probably the most fun I've had in hockey. Like as an adult, at least, like the KI was fun because it's like you don't really have a job. You're kind of living the billet lifestyle and things like that. But now we're all old guys. We got careers and families and things like that. But it's still, it's just you can't lose that competitive edge and these ex-pro guys, WHL guys, it's boys that still wanna play good hockey, and I'd honestly say it's become more exciting than probably junior A. In my opinion, it's definitely not as skilled overall. Like you get the odd here and there skilled ex-NHLer or WHL guy, but it's a lot more exciting because there's a wider range of skill abilities and you get a lot more physicality and it's a lot of guys that they want to be there because they love the game and they love being competitive. And you know, the senior hockey to me has been some of the most fun I've had in the ranch land, at least. And I'd say it's one of the, like, it's all small town Alberta too. It's probably the best thing you can do in Natton on a Friday night is go watch the Pals go beat up on somebody from Lethbridge, really. So,
yeah, I mean, and like you said, the you know, the small town rivalries, and I mean, some of the, you know, and there's a ton of senior leagues, and some that shit gets heated, man. And it's like, you know, and like you said, the guys, you're out there, and everyone's playing and competitive, and I mean, yeah, everyone's got to get up and go to work, but I mean, you know, nobody wants to lose and no one wants to look bad. So it's everyone's still got the athletic ego too. So it's like, you know, and, so I know, tempers can flare for sure. And, I mean, granted, like anything else, I mean, senior hockey, you know, it used to be a real, real wild, but, how is it in the Ranchland League in terms of fighting?
It you get crazy nights where you're getting escorted by police home and there's police sitting in between dressing rooms and stuff like that. And then you get wild nights and then you get nights that it's, very respectful and, and it's old guys playing good competitive hockey, but you might not see a fight, or you might see 15 fights in one night in a line brawl. So there's really no telling. It's all depends on the rivalry and how close you are with the other team, it seems.
Yeah, how are they in terms of like do they with the fighting? Are they pretty with the rules? What is how many fights are you allowed before suspensions happen and all that stuff? Or is it just doesn't matter?
I think it's we're allowed three fights. Like you get kicked out of a game if you get in a fight, which is kind of nice if you're hungover too or something like that. Got a long day ahead of you, so might need to get out of the game. I've used that a couple of times. That's that excuse and.
Either that or the third period's going to be 40. The third period might be an hour long, too.
Exactly, yeah. So if you want to get out of there early or you got an old lady at home, kid sick maybe, I don't know, you got to get out of there. There's always, you can go fight. But, no, you get kicked out of the game, and I think it's three games before suspension. But we're all old, too, so, you know, getting suspended, it's like or your parents aren't coming to the games yelling at you. Well, mine still does, at least my dad. But if you get suspended, it's not doesn't seem to be the end of the world, at least, because it's usually kind of funny or something like that. It's pretty easy going. Like, that's why it's fun, really.
Well, it's, so you play for the Natin Palominos, and it's a six-team league, the Ranch, Ranchland League. Who's your guys' big rival?
Lethbridge and Siksika usually are the biggest rival, just because, like, Natin's close enough to draw a lot of guys from Okotoks and kind of Calgary and stuff like that. So you can get a really high-end team, and same with Lethbridge. There's a lot of guys out there that have played good hockey, so and then you're just getting into what teams are closer to each other, and then you get the big rivalries. And same with Siksika, they get a lot of guys from Calgary and Strathmore that and from the Siksika reservation. They have an awesome team, so and we had a good season with both those ones this year. And I gotta say, like, we do have big rivalries, but there is like utmost respect as well, for because each guy is playing just for the love of it. So it's kind of nice to see. You get tough guys, but they shake your hand and go, you'll see them at the bar after the game and something, and it's totally fine. So yeah, it's been good for that.
Excellent. Well, and I said before we got going, I'm like, oh, I just got to check your elite prospects. I'm looking at your stats, and I'm kind of checking the Palominos roster, and I'm like, well, half of Ice Wars plays for the Palominos here. Like, we got Jordan Kennedy, Taylor McNeil, Travis Check, and you. I mean, well, if you guys are all in Ice Wars, I could imagine what you guys are like to play in the regular season. Is there any thought of the little black thing rolling around out there, or is it just like we're gonna bring the heat here?
Yeah, I think we did pretty good. Like I've gotten to a point now that it's I've actually improved in some skill, so I find that I can play a little bit of hockey here and there. But, and I'd say that's the same. Like Taylor McNeil's very skilled. Travis put the puck in the net. Jordan Kennedy, not so much. He's more of a he's a pretty brute guy out there, and just out there for the, he's a tough guy. But
you guys aren't going to get pushed around.
No, exactly. We do good in all aspects, I'd say, as the Palominos as a whole. Like there's some more really skilled guys and some other tough guys that didn't really want to do the whole Ice Wars thing or couldn't make it, but these are definitely the guys that would sign up. I mean, and it goes to show, like, Travis and Taylor McNeil, they're teammates and really good buddies, but there's a really good chance they'll be fighting each other in the this Cruiserweight tournament this Ice Wars.
Well, so, but yeah. Buddies yeah, like when I had Travis on, we were talking about that. Yeah, and there, of course, he's one of the eight in the Cruiserweight tournament. And like you said, Taylor McNeil, their teammate, and his first time, he's in the Cruiserweight tournament. And we, you know, I said to Travis, I said, you know, you guys might run it. It might be the luck of the draw. You might get each other in the first round here. There could be some some tensions in the Palomino locker room here. We'll.
We'll see how it pans out. I really hope they don't get each other in the first round, because the one guy goes home with less money. There's got to be a loser. The other guy will be so gassed because it'll be such a good fight. They're both two tough sons of bitches. So it will probably diminish their chances in the next two rounds. So I was hoping it would go to the last, if not the last round somehow, if the pools can be set up, maybe if AJ's listening, that they can be in different pools so that they can meet up with each other in the final, because there's no really doubt. Like, I mean, these other guys, they do look like tough competitors, but just maybe I'm biased as well, but Taylor McNeil and Trav are two of the toughest guys I've ever met in my life, and I wouldn't want to come across them on the ice as well. So
yeah,
it'll
well,
be interesting.
Yeah, and the first one, Travis looked really good there against Bo, so it'll you know, so we'll see. But well, in the first one, like we said at the start, you were the referee. how did you get did you want to go into it, and they were just like, we don't have a spot, but can you ref? Is that what happened, or how did this all?
That was pretty much exactly what happened. I'd thought on it. Jordan Kennedy's talking with AJ, and he's like, "Oh, we need one more guy." And I just said, "Okay, put me in, put me down." And then it just played out that it was an odd number, and it was just like, "Well, who has any reffing experience?" And like, I've reffed a little bit of beer league and some bantam hockey, so like, very, very minimal reffing experience, but I have put on the stripes before, and I was like, oh, fuck it. Like, well, I'll see what this is about, and I'll go up and ref and get my money in my hotel room, and I get to go watch all these guys beat up on each other and have a good time. But after it all happened, I just had this kind of gut feeling. I was like, I just hated reffing. It was like, I'm not meant for sitting on the sidelines and watching these gladiators go up against each other, and that's like, I wanted a taste of the glory a little bit. So I was like, oh, I gotta be able to participate in the next one. And then I was like, well, if they want me to do the first fight and ref the next ones, because it was tough, they needed a ref really bad too, so that's why I signed up again for the refing in the first one. But now things have played out, and people have heard what Ice Wars is about, and there's a bit more notoriety going on, so they've got refs now and stuff like that. And yeah, it played out for me, as in I don't have to put on the stripes again and can maybe go get a bit of the glory and be out in front of the crowd, which it just looks electric to me. So
oh yeah, well, and of course you're in one of the bouts here, and you're taking on returning Keegan McGraw, Paddywhack, and I mean, you got to see him obviously up close, and you know, as the ref and stuff. Yeah, just what was your overall takeaway from the event itself, and just being right there while they're fighting? It was just did it exceed your expectations? Like, was it better than you thought it was going to be? And
it was better than I thought it was going to be. Like, it was kind of surreal seeing all these, like, and they had the super heavyweights, and they're absolutely mutants of humans, like 6'8", 300 pounds, and massive. So it was a bit surreal for me being in there, and I'd say it definitely exceeded my expectations. Skating on that stuff, I was nervous to see how it'd be when the guys locked up and started swinging, because it's not like ice where you can cut in and hold your balance. It's that hard plastic, but it worked out well, and these guys are making the most out of it, and it looks great to me. So I'd say that's one thing that definitely exceeded my expectations, was how good everybody was going to be able to throw on this artificial ice that they got, and it's worked out really well.
Yeah, it really has. And in terms of how's your preparation been going? And I mean, I guess you obviously have a bunch of guys you could train with. Have the Palominos all kind of been doing the training together, kind of thing?
Yeah, just about everybody. We all kind of live in south of Calgary, southeast of Calgary, and so we've been training at Legacy Boxing Club, and I've been going every day, and like, I've almost found a new love for a new sport with this training. Another good thing about Ice Wars is it's gotten me really into boxing and everything about that. So yeah, we've been training together. Taylor McNeil's been doing 2-a-days up in North Calgary, but just because he's too far away from this gym. But me and Jordan and Trav have been working our asses off, and it's some of the hardest I've ever worked, but I feel great, and I'm in definitely good shape. I've been losing some beer belly a little bit as well, which is good. And yeah, no, it's been pretty good. I've been training my ass off. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Well, there we go. Well, man, I won't keep you for too much longer. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you're getting ready. I'm not going to ask you about your strategy or anything like that. I won't do that. But it was, you know, I appreciate you coming on. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Dallas Otto throw down at the Ice Force 2 against Keegan McGraw. And, I guess we'll see you in Edmonton. I'll buy you some beers after. And I appreciate you coming
on,
man.
Definitely be drinking some beers after. I've been laying off them, so it'll be good to grab a couple with you.
Well, that's kind of what talking to everybody. It was like, yeah, everybody is in training, so they're kind of all, you know, laying off. And I think as soon as the event's over, it's like, yeah, I can't get to the bar. I think there was a stampede to the bar last event. So yeah.
It was pretty funny seeing all these guys that at the last event and I had a bit of FOMO as well, and it was kind of sad because they had all battered the shit out of each other, won, lost, whatever happened. They were all at the bar afterwards, typical hockey players, fucking drinking beers, having shots, having a good time. So that was maybe one of the biggest parts of me hanging up the fucking reffing outfit, and because I just love to be a part of that. It's a good... It's like a team, and this whole Ice Wars crew, everybody's so respectful, and it's a good team atmosphere. I mean, you're fighting, but then there's a lot more to it, and everybody's looking out for each other, and AJ looks out for everyone, so it's very fun and exciting.
Yeah, no, and I echo what you were saying with the first one. I mean, you know, my expectations weren't real high for it. I mean, it was kind of like, well, we'll see, right? But the guys got in, and I mean, they weren't, there was no jersey jabs or nobody was fooling around. Like it was, they went for it and, you know, and yeah, it was like, yeah. You couldn't, I don't think anybody, well, after it was all said and done, I mean, you had your critics of the event and everything else, but in terms of, I know everybody just being on social media and having been online all the time and reading the comments, I didn't see anybody, these fights sucked or, you know, like no one was saying that. Everyone was like, holy shit, these guys are going for it, man. Like it was... Yeah, I mean, if you're a fight fan, I don't think you could complain about it.
No, it was awesome because there was no holding back. And, like, in the NHL, you see it all the time, these guys get in a so-called fight, but they go and grab each other and fucking not one punch is landed, and they're just looking out for themselves because, yes, they are million-dollar assets, but you don't just see these guys. Like, you will see when things get heated in the NHL, somebody they'll just both drop the gloves and swing because that's the tears of rage, as you said. But I think it was awesome because everybody had there's a agreement maybe that wasn't talked about, but it was just like, well, everybody's going to swing and fucking leave an impression for this because this is the first Ice Wars and AJ's looked after everybody. And it's just like, let's give these people a show. And I don't know if you could hear me, the other ref and I, but we were mic'd up and in the first event, and they told us, it's like, if they do get clinched up, you gotta kind of feed the fire a little bit and say, like, give these people a show, come on, like, start swinging. And it's definitely crazy. It is just what happened and what came out of that first event and just how everything went. I don't think it could have gone better. Every fight seemed like there was some big punches landed and thrown, and guys were eating punches and stuff. So, you know, it was awesome to see.
No, absolutely. Well, we're August 6th, folks. We'll be seeing it again, and Dallas is going to be in the middle of it. And I look forward to seeing it. And like I said, I appreciate you taking the time today to come on and talk about it. And good luck to you.
Oh, thanks for the call, Darren. Had a good time.
Excellent. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We'll see you in Edmonton.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?